folks. Welcome to the A Minute to Midnight show. This is Tony coming to you from New Zealand. And with me on the show today, I have John Haller in Ohio. Welcome, John.
Good to be with you again, Tony.
Yes, it's good to be speaking to you as well. So just before we kick off, I just want to let people know to make sure you're subscribed to A Minute to Midnight on our website by going down the right-hand side of the page and entering your email address if you haven't already done so to get notified of all of our shows and so forth. People sometimes complain that if I only put trailers up on YouTube, why don't I put the whole video up? Well, the last time, last video, I put the whole thing up on YouTube and it got banned and taken down. So hence, I'll be mostly back to just putting trailers on YouTube because of the censorship. So sorry, folks, but that's just the way it is. Anyway, John, welcome. I guess there's a lot we can talk about.
There is, in this strange dystopian world, where you live in a red light country, I guess, and I live in a country where, well, with regard to the thing on getting banned on YouTube, I've got a current, our church channel, Fellowship Bible Chapel, currently has an active strike against it on YouTube because of medical misinformation.
Yeah, that's what they said about mine too.
But I can never figure out what is the medical misinformation that I talked about. and it's totally insane. I try to use code words, like I refer to the virus as Charlie Vector 019er, and I referred to the vaccine as.
Yeah, well, be careful because this is going to be in our trailer.
Okay, well, let's maybe start over.
And you can. No, I'll just bleep that or something.
Okay. Well, so I try to be very careful in referring to things. I call it Charlie Vector 019er and the state approved treatment. But it's a constant battle because I don't know what medical misinformation is. And sometimes they're going back even to very old videos that have been there for a long time before their medical misinformation rules even came out and trying to, you know, and they're just, it's a constant battle. It's just, it's very frustrating. Because I'm very careful to source anything. I know that I played a certain individual who wrote a big book about another certain individual that's involved here in the United States, sort of leading the thing up, a doctor. And I played a few-minute clip where they didn't even talk about Charlie Vector 019er or the state-approved treatment. I played a clip of him being interviewed, and that's what got my video pulled down. And it was like a 6-minute clip from Tucker Carlson. And it was one of the, maybe the best interview I've ever seen by anybody on any subject. So this is a constant battle that we have here. Yeah. And now the problem though is what is okay to talk about and what is not okay to talk about. And I think part of this is, I'm of the mind that this is all planned to get us confused, to do self-censoring.
Well, it's pretty much, it's pretty much what's happening.
Yeah, and it's working because you sit there as you're talking and you're thinking like, okay, now, can I say it this way? Do I have to say it just a little bit of a different way? And so they win. But there is a concerted effort to censor information. Now, in the United States, we have, and I know you have people all around the world, and I'm a lawyer, we have a constitution. And in the constitution, the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law respecting, limiting the freedom of speech. Now, that has been taken by some court decisions and said that applies to all government in the United States. But now you have, for example, Jen Psaki, who is the president's press secretary. You have the president, Biden himself, coming out and saying the tech companies need to do more to censor what people are saying on the internet, on the tech platforms, and they need to be censored. Now, listen, this is the problem that we have right now, is that the government has outsourced censorship to the tech oligarchs.
Yes.
And these tech oligarchs are, you know, the biggest companies in the world are all tech companies. They have a lot of money. I've told you a number of times about the giant server farm that Facebook has here. They're building an artificial intelligence center out there, by the way. And Google is spending $2.5 billion building server farms across the road. Amazon has them all over town here in Columbus, Ohio. And now just last week, Intel came out and announced that they are going to spend in the first phase of the construction of the largest chip manufacturing plant on planet Earth is going to be built right out there by those server farms. They're going to spend $20 billion in the first phase and anticipate that by the time they're done, they will spend $100 billion in construction costs. So look, it's great for the economy here, but these big server farms are just out there to analyze data, bits and bytes of information. So I find the whole thing a bit creepy. I know I said something about the Facebook server farms, and I immediately had people commenting on my YouTube channel that worked out there. And I don't know that they ever followed me before. So this whole thing with artificial intelligence and censorship, but here in the United States, at least, the government is outsourcing to the tech oligarchs censorship. They're not allowed to do that. That is unconstitutional activity on the part of our government. And it's very troubling that they get away from it. They're doing indirectly what they can't do directly. And this will be sort of specific to the United States, but this is what started under the Obama administrations in the United States. Back in after the 2008 financial crisis, there was a lot of litigation to financial institutions and banks and other entities with a lot of money, about misrepresentations that might be made with regard to the quality of mortgages that they had, under which they had lent money to people to buy property. And then they were packaged in these investment vehicles called mortgage-backed securities. There were billions and billions and billions of dollars paid in settlements. What they did under the Obama administration is they took those settlements, and the money was then transferred through a series of transactions to left-wing NGOs that had been set up. So these left-wing NGOs got billions of dollars. Now what they've done is they have so the government outsourced a lot of things to they funded these NGOs. Now they've come out with some executive orders and things that have been issued by the Biden administration, particularly with regard to the election, that every government agency is to be involved in the election somehow. And you know they're not doing it because they want a free and fair election. Mm. You know they're doing it to manipulate the election, and they're using the American taxpayer money to do it. Also, when Obama was leaving office, he had a lot of political appointees, clearly, that were on board with his agenda. And what they did was they put those people, they seated almost all the federal agencies with those people, changing them from political appointees to people who have protected job status. It's almost impossible to fire them. So when Trump came in, whether you like Trump or not, when Trump came in, he had this massive bureaucracy that was seated with people that were clearly opposed to anything that he would want to do. So even though he could put his political appointees in charge of these agencies, the people just wouldn't do what the heads of the agencies wanted. And so it was, I don't know how to say it, it was a soft coup. It's only continued, and they're trying to do things to change the elections. They have a Voting Rights Act that they can't get through right now because a couple senators won't let them break the filibuster. It's passed the House already. there are a couple voting acts that they merged together, and it would essentially be to federalize all of the elections in the United States, which is itself unconstitutional because the Constitution says the states get to determine the rules as to how elections are going to be conducted. So we have this machine in place. Now, what's happened in the last week, where everything is essentially 50-50 in the Senate, which means, but in the event of a tie, the Constitution provides that the president of the Senate, who is the vice president of the United States, who in this case is Kamala Harris, gets to cast the tie-breaking vote. So if it's 50-50, she can be vote 51. They can do that for judicial appointments, legislation, budgets, those sort of things within certain limits. But now the problem is a 49-year-old senator from New Mexico, a Democratic senator, had a stroke either yesterday or the day before and had to have surgery to reduce swelling in his brain. There's no indication as to when he comes back. So this is just kind of upending everything politically in the United States. But back to what we were talking about earlier, I don't know what misinformation is right now because everything keeps changing. I saw that a number of countries and states and provinces in the U.S. and provinces in Canada had put these mandates in place that you had to get the state-approved treatment or you couldn't be employed. Now, the Biden administration lost the one that they put in place through Occupational Safety and Health Administration, called OSHA. They put in one that if you have a business with 100 or more employees, you had to put in this mandatory state-approved treatment requirement. Or if people didn't get the treatment, they had to be tested every week or twice a week, I can't remember. And then there was also mask mandates that went along with that. They took that all the way up to the Supreme Court. And it's not a final decision yet, but the Supreme Court said in a 6-3 decision, you're not going to win this. We're going to send it back to the lower court, but we're going to keep you from instituting that mandate. Well, they've now withdrawn that mandate for OSHA. But then I see places like Quebec was going to tax people who hadn't got the state-approved treatment.
You can mention that we're out of the trailer now. You're talking about the mandatory vaccine, right?
Yeah, mandatory vaccine thing. I trained myself to call it the state-approved treatment, so I'll use vaccine now.
Yeah.
So mandatory vaccines were going to be required in the United States and all businesses that had 100 or more employees. It was clearly unconstitutional. And fortunately, there was a 6-3 decision that allowed that. However, there was another case that came up, decided the same day and had oral arguments at the same time as the other case. And that was to require healthcare facilities that receive federal funding through Medicare or Medicaid, which is really just about every medical facility in the United States. All of the workers had to be vaccinated. On that, the court allowed them to put that mandate in place. But now it's really only going to be enforced if somebody blows the whistle on the healthcare facility. At the same time, there is a spike in COVID cases and there's a lot of people in the hospital, but they're letting go healthcare workers. And then they're complaining about, well, we don't have enough healthcare workers. So they're bringing in National Guard and military to fill the spots, which is in itself troubling to those of us who are concerned about deploying the military domestically. In any event, there's just so the mask mandates, they're in, they're out. I hear that Norway and Denmark, I'm not sure about Norway. I'm pretty sure Denmark has done away with the mandatory vaccine or the passports that they were using. Right now, Austria requires it. I don't know what the status is there in New Zealand. I saw your wonderful prime minister say that, you know, you were being put into a red light situation.
Yeah.
Which means shutting everything. And I even had to cancel my own wedding. And my reaction when she announced she's canceling her own wedding was, there's a really lucky guy someplace in New Zealand.
Oh, he's just as bad, I think.
Oh, but, well, maybe he does. They deserve each other.
Yeah.
But goodness gracious. So, and this is something, and I don't remember it, so I apologize if we talked about it before, but there was a series of articles that I came across last month, and I've talked about them in my prophecy updates that I do. They came from it's called the RAIR, R-A-I-R Foundation. Yeah. And it was a very good analysis about the fact that through the World Economic Forum, starting 30 years ago, they started a Young Global Leadership Summit or Training Institute.
Yeah, which so many people have gone through, including Jacinda Ardern and Gavin Newsom in California and Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Angela Merkel. Yeah, and so on and so on.
Emmanuel Macron.
Yeah.
And Justin Trudeau. And in fact, I came across a video today that somebody sent me of Klaus Schwab speaking at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government back in 2017, where he was praising the fact that, or applauding the fact that they had had Justin Trudeau come through their training at this global leadership summit.
There you go.
And I just saw another video of his. I was starting to watch it earlier today from 2021 when he was at the Harvard School of Government. And at that, the intro, the lady who was introducing Klaus Schwab to the audience said, "You're here because we have selected you as future leaders." And that was from last March or May, during the pandemic, when everything was supposedly shut down.
Well, I don't know if you know that the deputy CEO, whatever you call the second in charge of Pfizer in America, she is currently in the Young Global Leaders class, the 112, trainee. So there you go. So Pfizer,
And Pfizer, by the way, just sort of current news, they are seeking approval in the United States for vaccinations for children from 6 months to 4 years of age. Crazy. It's already been approved down to age 5.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about it, this was just reported this afternoon, is that usually and full disclosure here, I've represented pharmaceutical companies in litigation over their drugs. So I know a little bit about the FDA approval process and the adverse reaction reporting and that type of thing that's done during their approval and getting their license to issue the medication, other than under an emergency use authorization. So I've reviewed files like that, rooms full of files where all those documents are located. So I know a little bit of what I speak about. Usually a company decides, hey, we have a vaccine that we developed, or we have a medication that we developed. We're going to go to the FDA and we're going to get it approved. In this case, though, unusual for how this happens is the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, came to Pfizer and BioNTech, or whatever it's called, and said, "Hey, would you guys please submit your approval to get the vaccines to the 6 month to 4 year olds?" And, everybody can make their own decision about the vaccines, but I'll just cite an example. So we have the trucker thing up in Canada, and a lot of people listen to me in Canada, and they've been sending me videos and reports and that type of thing. So the truckers have got together because both the United States and Canada put in mandates that truckers had to be vaccinated, particularly had to be vaccinated across the border. It's the most heavily trafficked border in trade in the world. So what's that has done is somewhere between 10 and 25% of truckers are not vaccinated. that's only going to exacerbate any supply chain problems.
Yes.
So the truckers in Canada got together and they said, okay, we're going to go to Ottawa. And so they've had, I don't know, thousands of trucks drive across Canada to Ottawa, really haven't had any problems to speak of. There've been a couple of incidents, but you don't know if that's, you know, somebody in there trying to instigate problems and that type of thing.
Yeah.
But I've seen the emails and that type of thing that the leaders of that protest, the Canada trucker convoy, have sent out, and they said, listen, act, you know, respectfully, obey law enforcement, don't do anything illegal, be kind, be respectful, and that type of thing. But the media, I've been watching the Canadian media, and our media, first of all, barely talks about it.
Yeah.
This is huge. I mean, they're talking about 40, 50 mile long convoys of truckers coming across. Nova Scotia came out and said, hey, you can't even stop and applaud in your car the truckers going by because that's dangerous. We need to put in emergency health orders to prevent you from doing that. That was Nova Scotia.
Wow.
And and Canada is, I think, the second biggest country on the planet, but it's not that heavily. I mean, it's probably the most sparsely populated country on the planet. So anywhere you go in Canada, it's pretty much outside of the cities. It's really wide open spaces. So this makes no sense. I heard media in Canada saying the other day, like, well, we don't really know. What is it that these truckers are protesting? Well, go read a sign, for crying out loud. What happened to investigative journalism or opening your eyes, trying to figure out what the facts are? It's one of the most incredible things that I've seen.
And then the man you mentioned earlier, Trudeau, hiding away supposedly with COVID and saying he won't even talk to the truckers because of swastikas or something on some. Yeah, there's your instigators. Well, probably a couple of people that have been planted with swastikas so they can use it as an excuse. You know,
it's probably one or two. It could be a plant, and it could be somebody. I you got to be really careful about using the Nazi symbols even in your protests. But it could just some people saying is we think our government is going this direction. Yeah. That's why we put this sign on our flag. We don't support that.
Yeah.
We oppose what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're the fascist.
Yeah, but Trudeau refuses to meet with him because of hateful speech or some stupid thing. I mean, any old excuse.
Well,
you know?
He actually did an interview recently in French, and I translated it and played it on one of my updates, where he said that, well, you know, the people who don't get vaccinated, they're racist and misogynist. Like, how do you make that leap logically?
Yeah.
Then when he was doing the thing last week, he was very derogatory. You know, these people are extremists. They're dangerous. That type of thing. I won't meet with them. Then he comes out with a statement and says, well, I can't meet with them because I'm isolating. He made this statement. He says, everybody go get vaccinated. Everybody needs to get vaccinated. Oh, by the way, I can't do anything because I've caught COVID.
Supposedly triple vaccinated and he's got COVID. What? Surely that's like, hang on a second. Well, what the heck was the point in the vaccine that you're just encouraging? But no, they won't put two and two together. They've just got to run out and get the vaccine.
It is kind of interesting that this seems to be the first vaccine in history where you can be vaccinated, but your vaccination status only works if the guy you run into on the street has been vaccinated.
Yeah, exactly.
It's absolutely
absurd. Well, actually, I think it's worse than a fast, John. I don't know if you've seen any of the videos and things about people discovering nanotech in the Pfizer vaccine. I don't know if you've seen any of those.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah, well, I mean, if that's the case, and I mean, I haven't investigated it deeply enough to be sure I trust it, but if that's the case, then that would fully explain the drive to push everyone into getting vaccinated, including little kids. Well, it's not even a vaccine. I hate even calling it that. But if there is nanotech, self-assembling nanotech in these, you know, shots, that would explain a lot.
Well, and it's interesting to back to the Rare Foundation article on the vaccines and this World Economic Forum and the Global Leadership Summit and training, that type of thing. And the point that was made by they built off an article that was in German, and I can't remember the guy's name. Wolf was his last name. He had written an article in German for German publication, and he said, you know, why is it that every country in the world pivoted to do essentially the same thing at the same time?
Oh, yeah, I know the article you're talking about. Yes, the young global leaders.
Yeah,
all trained. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's because there has been, I don't know how else to say it, there is a coup. And in fact, I'll recommend another podcast today that I saw. It's on Secure Freedom Radio by Frank Gaffney, and he's interviewing a guy named Abramowitz. And Abramowitz, I can't remember the title of his book. He wrote a book last year, year before, where he talks about we are in a war on every level. This is not a war that's going to start or anything like that. We are ultimately in a spiritual war, a spiritual battle, where everything is being trying to undo the Judeo-Christian tradition, some of which led to things like the United States Constitution, at least partially. And so everything is being done on every level. So you have these leftists, you have communists, you have China, you have the tech people attacking you, you have people in government on both sides of the aisle attacking you here in the United States. And we are in the midst of a massive spiritual war. Yeah. And the thing that he said was, you cannot in that war play defense. You have to play offense, because the other side is offense 24/7.
Yeah.
So are there some things to be changing it? Back to the Canadian trucker thing, the Washington Post put a editorial cartoon in their paper last week, Thursday or Friday, where they said they had a picture of trucks. And on each truck, on the trailer part of the truck, where the big word was the big word fascism.
Yeah.
Now, how are people protesting for freedom to be out from under mandates? How are they the fascists? So what you see is you see this complete flipping of language.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating. So Trudeau comes out. So he does the interview, calls him misogynist and racist. Then he comes out. He's very derogatory to them. And then before he went into isolation, he did a little news conference, and he says, these protests are inappropriate. Oh, I know what he said. These people hold unacceptable views, to which even some papers like the National Post and stuff in Canada are putting in editorial saying, who made you king that gets to decide what's acceptable and unacceptable? Yeah. So this is what's happened. We have these totalitarians and globalists in control.
Every country, pretty much.
Pretty much every country. And like I said, in the United States, they can't censor, they can't take down speech. So they just outsource it to somebody else. The EU did this through their internet rules a few years back, where they put in internet rules that said, you know, if it's hate speech, then, you know, the tech company has to take it down within 24 hours or there's a huge fine. Well, so what does that do to the tech companies? So the tech companies, they're not going to say, okay, well, here in France and Denmark, we're going to take down posts that could be called hate speech. But here in the United States, or over in the United States, where we don't have hate speech laws for the most part, we'll let everything go. No, what they do is they go to the most restrictive rule and then apply it across the board. That's what's happened. It's pretty easy to see how that happened. So now Trudeau is saying, I'm not going to participate in the protest. I will go to protests that I agree with. And he says this, I have the clip, like Black Lives Matter.
Hmm.
And So I did a big thing on Black Lives Matter on Sunday. This organization is totally corrupt.
Yeah.
There's like $60 million. They don't know where it went. They appointed a couple people when the heads of the founders of Black Lives Matter were found to have purchased, I don't know, three, four, five properties, a number of them in Southern California. People said, well, wait a minute, this is a 501c3 charity. What are you guys doing purchasing these big expensive properties?
Well, I did back when I was in America, which was 2020, I did a video where I showed that George Soros's Open Foundation was the biggest financial contributor to Black Lives Matter, and they basically kicked it off. They started it. So that's
what Black Lives Matter did was they appointed two sort of supporters as like co-directors of Black Lives Matter. But then they issued a statement last week saying, hey, we're not involved with this company. We're not involved with Black Lives Matter because we could never come to an agreement as to what information they were going to share with us or what we were going to do. So now nobody knows who's running this thing. Mm. It came out, they had a thing like we're against the nuclear family and that sort of thing that they scrubbed from their website. And yet you have all these people that continue to support it, but nobody looks into what they're really about. And they're also pushing the transgender and sexual LGBTQ agenda as well.
By the way, I just want to quickly backtrack to what I said earlier about the nanotech aspect of what could be in these vaccines. Sure. Yesterday, I believe it was Sue Gray, who is a lawyer in New Zealand, who they, I believe, are trying to strike off the register. I don't think they have as yet. Her and Dr. Shelton, who is, I think, being struck off the medical register for his stance on the vaccine, they went to the High Court, I think, in New Zealand with some evidence, I believe, that some scientists in New Zealand have discovered the same nanotechnology apparently in the Pfizer vaccine that's been discovered elsewhere, like that guy in Spain, that professor and so forth. So, but when they tried to, I believe, talk to the Director General of Health in New Zealand, Ashley Bloomfield, he refused to meet with him and talk with them. And so they'll start, that nobody wants to know. You know, it's like, surely if there's even the slightest risk that there might be nanotechnology in these vaccines, if you're a genuine medical professional, you would want to know, hey, this should be halted until we discover whether this is true or not. Correct. But of course, right. No, it's the steam rolls on and on. So hence why I'm thinking the push to get little kids vaccinated. Because as we know, I mean, kids are not really dying of COVID, especially not Omicron. You know, it's like little kids, why they're trying to push everybody into being vaccinated, there has to be either a control or a depopulation agenda or both in it. There can't be, you know, there's no logical reason otherwise.
Well, and what do they do? Does anybody in public, if you talk about natural immunity, you're going to be accused of spreading medical misinformation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And since when is this the case? I mean, yeah. So let's say there, and I don't know the exact molecular makeup, but let's say there's 20 spikes on the virus that you get exposed to when you get sick and you recover. Your immune system is going to build up, because you've recovered, is building up immunity to the full spike, all the spikes in the protein.
Yeah.
As opposed to the vaccines, which give you sort of a little bit of spike and that type of thing. So that's why I think that the studies have shown, and I think it's pretty clear that natural immunity is much superior to the whatever this thing they're giving you, the state approved treatment, what they call it, which they've redefined as a vaccine, or they've changed the definition of vaccine to include this. And so they don't talk about natural immunity. And I've had, you know, probably pre-Delta COVID, and I've had Omicron. I didn't get tested, but I'm 99.99% sure that we had it six weeks ago. And it was like a really bad cold. Okay. I mean, I didn't feel good, but I didn't have a fever like I had with the other one. I didn't have much of a fever with the first one either, but I lost my sense of taste and smell. this one was just like a cold, and started off with 3 mornings. I woke up with just this sort of a bone crushing migraine headache.
Yeah.
But then it was over. And so we're running around, and there's probably tens of millions of people in the United States that have had COVID and recovered. And I've had friends that have died from this thing. So I don't dismiss it. In fact, a mutual friend of ours just a week ago passed away. And it's horrible. Yeah. I mean, Steve Mitchell in our church, pastor of our church, died a year ago, September. So don't tell me I haven't done this, but I've also known people who've had reactions to the vaccine, and you're not allowed to talk about that. Yeah. But I know of a lady who got vaccinated. The next day she collapsed at home, hit her head. They thought she'd fractured her skull. But when they did the autopsy, they couldn't find anything. And I think the clear implication is she had a stroke.
Yeah. This is so common. I mean, you're hearing this everywhere. People getting, young people that have been previously healthy, dying of heart attacks, getting strokes.
Women who've been in menopause for 20 years are starting to bleed like they're having a period.
I mean, there's something seriously wrong, and it should be really obvious.
So if I could recommend there was a 5-hour webinar that was held by Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. I held it at one of the Senate buildings in D.C., and he had Robert McCulloch, Robert Malone, and Peter McCulloch. Yeah. I'm sorry. Who, by the way, is one of the most published cardiologists, if not the most published physician on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And so they have a 5-hour symposium. It's called Second Opinion. You can easily find it on Rumble or BitChute. It's on YouTube. People put it on YouTube and it gets taken down almost immediately. But then the whole mainstream media is watching these lunatics on MSNBC this morning. They're running around talking about it as all medical misinformation. These are some of the most respected physicians on the planet, and it's all medical misinformation. It's just, I'm getting tired of being gaslighted. So we see things happen, and then people say, well, no, that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. It's like critical race theory and how it's to be implemented, being taught in schools. And the heads of the teacher unions come out in the United States and say, we're not teaching critical race theory in schools. But this morning I'm looking at a slide presentation from schools in Salinas, California. And the slides say, this is what critical race theory is. And then they come out and say, well, we don't really teach critical race. It's ridiculous. I'll give you an example of something. This is a little sort of related, but not, it's not unrelated. So in colleges and universities all across the United States, kids cannot come to college unless they're vaccinated.
Yeah.
But now they're having these outbreaks of Omicron because the vaccine doesn't really protect against the outbreak. It doesn't prevent the spread.
Oh, they need more vaccines then.
So I will give you an example. Someone who wrote to me about a relative who is at Baylor University in Texas, ostensibly, nominally a Baptist institution.
Hmm.
$70,000 a year is what it costs to go to Baylor. Yeah. So the students, they test positive. They have to be, they're put into a 5-day quarantine. They're not allowed to leave their room. They have their meals delivered to them, but there's reports of colleges all over where they're going sometimes 48 hours with no food being delivered to the room. So, and they're like, it's almost like they're starving the people.
Mm.
And I hear this going on in hospitals as well. There's nurse after nurse after nurse I've heard saying they don't give any food to the people that are in the ICU for COVID. And they sometimes don't get any food for 8 days. So anyway, so at Baylor, so you pay $70,000. You get put into quarantine. And what happens when you're in quarantine? You miss class. Now, everybody says, well, Baylor, $70,000 a year, they probably have virtual classes and everything. it's up to the whim, the decision of the professor. And a lot of professors just aren't bothering. Well, if you get three absences at Baylor, you fail the class.
Mm.
And so now here you are, these kids, they don't even have symptoms.
Yeah.
They tested positive for COVID. They're asymptomatic. They're put in thing. They miss three classes. They fail the class. And Baylor says, tough, you don't get a refund.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this is just one example of just how this is decimating everything. I mean, the supply chain issue.
It's destroying society.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right, Tony. I mean, it's frustrating because, and I'm thinking like, there's a lawsuit. That's a lawsuit that anybody could win if they filed it against Baylor. Mm-hmm. And there was a big report about Ohio University down here in Athens, Ohio, where kids aren't getting food and they can't go to class. They can't get their education. And it's sort of like, why did they even go?
Yeah.
It's just tearing everything apart. Now they're saying, I just read a report before we started talking where they're now concerned that, well, Johns Hopkins came out with a big report saying, I think a fair assessment of the report is it says essentially lockdowns and these type of things, they really haven't worked. They haven't really made a difference. But then on the other hand, the other report I saw just before we started talking was that they're concerned that the social distancing, the mask, and keeping kids apart have interfered with the kids' development of their immune system developing against rather common germs and that type of thing. So then we have the, and now they're reporting that there's been a huge, especially in the United States, a huge spike in excess deaths.
Yes.
We had the Indiana Assurance executive a few weeks ago whose Zoom call with people was put up. And he said, we've got a 40% increase in death claims, death and disability claims, compared to 2020 or 2021. He said that if there was a 10% increase, it would be a 200-year outlier event. It was like, which means it's almost unheard of. What he said, though, and no one has challenged this. No one has come out and said this guy's crazy. No other insurance companies have come out and said, that's not our experience. It is their experience. As he said, this is what all insurance companies are experiencing in this area. And these are employed people. 40% increase when a 10% thing would be unheard of. We have a 40% increase. So now you can say, well, that's because hospitals have closed down. They haven't been doing treatments. People aren't going to the doctor. And I have to tell you, I know people that have been sick and ill, and they don't want to go to the ER. Mm. They don't want to go to the hospital. Yeah. They don't want to go to the doctor even.
Well, I mean, in America, say, if you have COVID and you end up in ICU and they put you on a ventilator, you might as well be writing your obituary straight away, you know, because people, not almost everyone, it seems, it goes on a ventilator, doesn't come out the other end. I mean, there might be a few exceptions.
Well, I have a family member recently who was in the, ended up in ICU, and he was on a ventilator for 5 days and got off. Now
he's
under 40.
Yeah.
But, you know, so he's younger.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, this relative, he was in bed in ICU for 10 weeks.
Mm.
He has to learn how to walk again.
Yeah.
And he's got young children and stuff and a family. He's not even allowed to work for at least 6 months. So the COVID thing is real. Okay.
Yeah. But why do people in New Zealand not die of it when they catch it? Why do people in America die on, like, it seems to be that, to me, that percentage-wise, America, supposedly the best healthcare system in the world, seems to have the highest percentage of people that die of it. And yet, well, in New Zealand, okay, we haven't got the same number of cases, but 52 deaths in 2 years. And some of those people, I mean, there's been several thousand cases now, and that people are not dying.
I think there's it's probably a complicated issue. Brett Weinstein, who's an evolutionary biologist, he has a thing called the Dark Horse podcast. He was a guy from Evergreen University that got canceled. So he and I think it's his, he and his wife have this thing, and they've been sick with COVID. But he had a really good thing about a month ago, and he said, look, that there are disparities, but sometimes it's like, how do people process vitamin D? If you have darker skin, you have an issue with absorbing vitamin D from the sun. And part of it, and then we put people inside and say, don't go outside. That, and then it's in the winter in the United States. Like, we never see the sun here in Ohio for months. I mean, it comes out a few times during the whole winter, late fall and winter season. But, and when it comes out, it's like, you know, your eyes, it takes a day to adjust because it's so bright. But the, he said it's vitamin D. And so certain races have issues with vitamin D. So we need to give those people vitamin D. We need to give them zinc and that type of thing. But the thing is, I listened to his podcast. He's an evolutionary biologist. I would disagree with him theologically on that type of thing. But listen, what he said was so logical and so reasonable. Mm. It was like, why is nobody else?
If you were to go out there and say, taking vitamin D and zinc and vitamin C is a really good preventative for COVID-19 and so on and so forth, you'd probably be censored for medical misinformation. That's how crazy it is.
Well, but I saw at Davos a couple weeks ago, there's Fauci, one of their first sessions. And he's saying, well, you know, you got to get the vaccine because you're going to get much better coverage with the vaccine than you are with natural immunity. And that's just false.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody used the example. There's a picture of Magic Johnson, the basketball player, and Governor Gavin Newsom at the National Football League playoff game in Los Angeles on Sunday, standing there talking with no mask on, of course, because it's a rule for you little peons, not a rule for us elite.
Yeah.
But what somebody made a great point was, there's Magic Johnson. There was a push to develop a vaccine for HIV, which Magic Johnson has lived with now for way over 20 years. How did he survive that? How has he survived all these years? I had friends that died from AIDS, HIV AIDS, back in the 80s and 90s. People that I knew. How did Magic Johnson survive? They gave him therapeutics.
Yeah.
You know? But who was pushing the vaccines back for HIV back in the 90s? It was Tony Fauci.
Mm.
But here's a guy who in the picture, and somebody said, hey, well, he survived because they used therapeutics with this virus. Well, why is nobody talk about that in public? Listen, I know doctors. I know one doctor who his partners, because he was prescribing one of the non-approved therapeutics that costs about 2 cents a dose. Everybody knows what that is. Pfizer has their own now that costs hundreds of, if not thousands of dollars to take. Yeah. And that's approved. And it doesn't even seem to be as effective. Anyway, his partners in his medical practice said, leave, get out of here. Their doctors being fired and taken to task before their licensing boards all over the country.
And in New Zealand, that's what I'm saying. Any doctor that's speaking out is basically being taken to task and risks being taken off the medical register if they haven't already been done. So,
right.
So there is no informed consent. It is you will inform them of our side of the story and any other side you're fired. Basically.
Well, Ron Johnson, in his webinar, someone asked the question, because they had doctors and lawyers there that are fighting this. And people need to go watch it. It's 5 hours. It's well worth your time. But, and again, it's on Rumble, and I've seen it on Rumble for sure, and it's on BitChute. But So somebody gets up and says, listen, how many of you here in the audience, and there's a few hundred people in the audience, have had trouble with censorship, your job threatened, your law license, your medical license threatened because of what you've said about this problem? And it was 70 to 80% of the audience raised their hands.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
And so this is happening. And you can tell some lady kind of got on me in a store, coming into a store, like, get your mask on, put a mask on.
Yeah.
And so I said this is what I did. I said, look, ma'am, I don't know you, but what I'm getting from you is you think for you to be protected between you and me, there needs to be two masks, right? My mask and your mask. I said, why don't you put another one on?
Oh, that's a classic. Excellent.
And if I'd been thinking, I would have said, and if you need one, there's a whole bunch of them laying on the parking lot out there that you can pick up and put on because they're all over the place.
Yeah.
So that's how I think. And I didn't want to be rude or anything, but I'm thinking like, you know, and look, I want to be safe. If you want to decide on your course of medical treatment, listen, I also want to say this with regard to people who have a loved one who ends up in the hospital. It is very, very difficult. There are stories coming out about how doctors are just making things up. They're not going with the wishes of the family. And so the thing that I don't want to do is I don't want to layer on people a guilt trip. Like you didn't make the right decisions with regard to your loved one. That's just not a fair thing to do. And we need to be very sensitive and loving in the way we approach that, because when you have someone who, you know, they're there and they can't breathe.
Yeah.
You need help.
Yes.
And unfortunately though, I've never seen anything like this. And I spent a large portion of my legal career defending doctors. And I just have to tell you, I see the medical profession has changed. The legal profession has changed. And now I'm seeing these things, Tony, where they're training doctors that they're supposed to be more concerned. I just saw it last week. I can't remember what medical school it was. It was one of the big medical schools in the United States. And they're saying is that we need to be more concerned about community care as opposed to individual care. Just process that with these psychotic lunatics.
It's all about collective. Yeah, the collective socialism thing. Yeah.
So anyway, so we live in this very dystopian world, and it's hard to I feel like these narratives are being shoved down my throat. So
They are.
Everybody's an extremist that might have supported protest on January 6th. You're an extremist, you're a terrorist. That type of thing. And here in the United States, Tony, we have people that have been in jail waiting trial on misdemeanor charges for a year with no bail. Listen, the definition of a misdemeanor in the United States is it's punished by imprisonment less than a year. They've been in prison for over a year waiting trial.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Julie Kelly's got a great book out. Go find it. She's, I think, at American Greatness, and she's been writing about it. But I some people did some bad things. They should be punished for that. But it didn't work, and nothing's happened since. But it's a constant narrative. It's January 6th, January 6th,
but
January
6th. But if you 6th, did any, 6th. Yeah, any other crime, I mean, you get released. If you burgle someone, the police don't follow it up. If you, you know, assault someone, the police don't follow it up, and so on and so forth. It's like targeted, you know, they choose what crimes now, it seems, to investigate. Well, look, John, we're coming up getting pretty close to an hour, so we'll have to look to wrap up. So I'll just give you a couple of minutes just to sum up, maybe give you a final thoughts on it.
Well, like I said earlier, and this podcast that I heard today about the spiritual war that we're in. Now, I don't even think the guy was a Christian. Yeah. He's Jewish. But there, people are noting this, that this is a spiritual battle. So what do we do in a spiritual battle? We have to armor up. We have to put on the whole armor of God, like it says in Ephesians 6.
Yeah.
And then I do like the verse, and I cite it all the time in 1 Corinthians 16, where Paul says, listen, stand firm in the faith and act like men. You know, it's you need to be strong. And I don't know how this progresses from here. I don't think, what's the saying? Normal isn't coming back, but Jesus is.
Yeah.
And I think we need to hold on to that hope. But we have to understand that there are things that are changing. There are supply chain issues. There's going to be food shortages. Now, we haven't seen much around here, but I talk to people elsewhere in the United States, and they're like, shelves in our grocery store are empty. It looks like the old Soviet Union.
Yeah.
So I think we need to be, you know, wise as serpents, harmless as doves. We need to prepare. We need to take care of our family, those around us, that type of thing. But we really need to be rooted in the Word of God and putting on daily the whole armor of God, because this ultimately is a epic spiritual battle. We know in Revelation, when Satan is booted out of heaven, it says that the devil comes down with great fury, with great wrath. Why? Because he knows his time is short. So if we live at that period of time where we're getting closer to the return of the Lord, then we need to understand that the devil and his minions are going to be, they're going to understand that, you know, our game is almost over. And they're going to fight it. And so we need to be prepared for that mentally, spiritually, and physically. And we need to be meeting with other believers too, I think. I think that's important.
Yeah, well, that's good. Good way to sum up. Yes, well, there's so much going on all the time. It'd be good to catch up again soon, John, because there's plenty of other subjects
we may be in World War before.
Yeah, we never even got to that one, but yeah, that's the thing.
Well, I'll just say this on Ukraine. I don't know what Putin's going to do. There are things that lead me to believe that he's going to do something and invade. But then on the other hand, there's no propaganda being pushed out to the Russian people to explain away things. And so that kind of leads me to believe that maybe he's just, you know, trying to do a really strong negotiation. So I pray that that's the case.
Yeah.
But if that thing goes to war, Europe runs out of gas, people are going to, I mean, it's not a good situation.
Yeah.
So we need to pray that the cooler heads prevail in that whole situation.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
Anyway,
well, thanks, John. It's definitely been an interesting hour. So thanks for being on the show with me again today.
Glad to do it. Look forward to it again.
Yep, we'll have to do one again soon. Cheers. Folks, as I mentioned at the start of the show, make sure that you go to aminutetomidnight.com and subscribe to us there by going down the right-hand side and entering your email address if you haven't already done so. Minute to Midnight is run 100% by donations, and you can donate at aminutetomidnight.com if you want to help us out. It's always hugely appreciated, so thanks folks that do help us out. The music used, I've written, played, and recorded, and you can download that at aminutetomidnight.com if you want as well. So cheers folks, hopefully we'll be back with another show in a few days' time. Stay safe and God bless.